Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we have come to the next part of mindfulness for young adult session, and that is a sutta teaching part or Dhamma sermon related to Kagga Visana Sutta. Actually, we were discussing Kagga Visana Sutta for a long time now, and particularly this sutta is related to secluded practice, and different Paccheka Buddhas are explaining their different types of achievements or different types of experiences probably they had before become a Paccheka Buddha, or sometimes what are the significant qualities that they have acquired. So likewise, different ideas, different perspectives they are introducing. So that is the way that they are explaining how they have achieved Paccheka Buddhahood, and most of the time they have some similar approach. So sometimes they are kings and then they ordain and then they become Paccheka Buddhas, and then they explain how they have achieved that. So likewise, some interesting points are there for us to learn, and this whole Kagga Visana Sutta consists of around 40 verses, and now we have come to around 27 or roughly around 30 verses. We have covered around 30 verses now. And today we have come to the another verse, which is marked as 66. 66 in the sense, starting from the very beginning of Suttanipatha. Suttanipatha is one of the very interesting books available in the Kuddaka Nikaya, where the shorter collections are accumulated and presented. And Suttanipatha actually consists of very interesting and very profound suttas like Ratana Sutta, Karaniyamitta Sutta, Mangala Sutta, etc. And those are quite popular, very popular. And Kagga Visana Sutta is also available in that same Suttanipatha. So if we go to the story behind this particular verse, number 66, here also there is one king called Varanasi, and he is a special one in the sense that he was able to acquire first jhana. Now this is a kind of a situation, very rare situation, because while being a king, acquiring this kind of a higher concentration is very difficult, because as a king we know that they have very many things to attend. There are a lot of things to say consider. So likewise, there are many things to happen, or there are a lot of tasks to achieve. So even with that kind of situation, he was able to understand this Dhamma, and he was able to achieve this first jhana. So that is what mentioned in this verse. So first jhana, as you know, is one of the absorptions that one may encounter in the samatha practice. In samatha practice, actually, it is also not immediately that one may encounter first jhana. Rather, it's a kind of a slow progress. One may have to develop mindfulness. Once mindfulness has developed to a certain extent, then one may be able to develop a fair amount of concentration. And that concentration, once developed further, one may get into this first absorption. So that is how it is typically developed. Assume that if you are practicing Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, so if you develop like that, so there is a situation that you are able to keep your attention on the breath. In breath, out breath, you are keeping your attention in line with the breath. And once it is successful, so now mind does not waver. Mind fairly, very closely observe the breath. So once that is also successful, now there's a little difference here in the jhana level, because it is not that you are trying to recognize different aspects of the breath. Rather, you are using it as an anchor to maintain concentration, to further develop concentration. There's a little difference. Now, typically in the Vipassana approach, we encourage yogis to recognize minor aspects, very refined, say, characteristics of the breath, whether it is long, whether it is short, whether it is warm, whether it is cool, from which nostril it is going in. So likewise, those subtle aspects we are trying to understand. But here it is a bit different. Here the priority is given not for the understanding, not for the wisdom part, but to the concentration. So therefore, we are not going to inquire that much of detail, investigate that much of detail, rather just simply maintaining our attention closer to the nostril. So with that kind of an approach, more and more our mind get collected, or our concentration get collected at the nostril, closer to the nostril. As a result of that, there's a situation where one may come across what you call a nimitta. Sometimes we call as counterpart sign, anapanasati nimitta, a sign of concentration. And it might also can appear. It may happen like a, say, like a cloud, or may like a light. Different ways it can manifest, and you recognize it, and you are continuing your practice. It is not that you immediately look at it, rather you allow it to manifest as natural as possible, and you simply be aware of what is going on. Especially you are continuing your practice with the breath, because when the concentration is developed, only we get this concentration sign, nimitta. So if we completely forget the development part, then even we lose the nimitta as well. We lost the nimitta as well. So without immediately looking at the nimitta, what we have to do is simply continue our practice with the breath. As we further develop concentration, so that counterpart sign, that nimitta become more and more brighter and more stable. Previously it was not stable, and it is maybe with different colors. But as we develop concentration and wisdom, sorry, concentration and mindfulness, so this nimitta become very much like brighter and sometimes even transparent. And therefore, you are tempted to look at it. So then it's a kind of a natural looking at. It's not that you are by purpose looking at it, but rather due to its pure nature that you are tempted to look at it. And very much like your breath and this nimitta coincide or merge each other. So therefore, very comfortably you are looking at it. So as a result of that, now you let go of the breath and you are keeping your attention with the nimitta. What happened next is that you are simply being with it. Nothing else to do. You are very comfortable. You are feeling at ease. You are looking at the nimitta. That's it. And you are quite happy with it. And you are not even here trying to understand the characteristics of the nimitta. Rather, you are here now, you are using simply nimitta for a way of keeping your attention or maintaining your concentration. Now, as you continue your concentration like this, what happened next is that you maybe mostly the with an unexpected time, at an unexpected time, you get absorbed with the nimitta. Because when you wish something, it may not happen. But when you simply let go of everything and you allow things to happen, you are quite happy, contented with what is going on. And you are fully aware of the nimitta and you are quite happy with it. You are maintaining a very pleasant atmosphere in the mind. Then as a result of that, you get absorbed to the nimitta. So then, probably, again and again, you have to do this. And kind of a slight variation can happen in the mind from the nimitta, but automatically it is coming back to nimitta. Slight variation happen, again mind coming back or applying back to the nimitta. So likewise, this applied thought is there. So it's a very slight going out or very slight distraction may happen, but immediately you are applying your mind back to the nimitta. And once you apply your mind there, you are observing nimitta, or you are somewhat keeping your attention inside the nimitta. So while you are there, mind is now fairly concentrated. You don't need to do much. Rather, it's a very much kind of an automatic process. Mind has developed fair amount of momentum to do it by itself. So you don't need to do much. Now it's a matter of observing the whole situation. It's a very pleasant, rapturous situation. And further, as you are doing this, you feel quite comfortable, and your body feel quite lighter, and mind also become lighter, you feel quite lighter, and all the pains, aches, etc. has gone, and you feel quite comfortable, quite pleasurable. So that is also there. And mind is very much united with this nimitta. So mind and the nimitta has become very much the same. So therefore the concentration is also there. So here we are talking about five jhana factors, what we call as the jhana factors. Those are the five qualities which we are attributed to the first jhana. First jhana consists of five jhana factors: vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata. So vitakka is where we are again and again applying our mind to that nimitta, and vichara is where we are keeping our attention onto the nimitta or with that nimitta without allowing the mind to wander. And once we are successful, automatically this rupturous feelings, maybe bodily rupturous feelings, mental rupturous feelings may arise, and you feel quite comfortable and you are feeling at ease, and body is also quite comfortable, and you feel somewhat tranquilized, and mind is unwavering, fairly fixed with the nimitta. So the ekaggata is also there. So these are the five factors available in the first jhana. And you can see, as I mentioned in the diagram here, in the table here, so these jhana factors are quite opposite to hindrances. So hindrances are the ones actually covering our mind, which are blocking our mind. So the jhana factors are the opposite. They are opening our mind. They are fairly activating our mind. So these jhana factors are counterpart to the different nivaranas, different hindrances. So as I mentioned here, so applied thought, vitakka, when we have to do it again and again, so there is no time for us to sleep. So there is no room for the mind to become drowsy, because the next object is available. So next time you have to look at it again and again, you have to apply your mind again and again, you have to look at it. So there is a task at hand. So as a result of that, you can't simply be lethargic. So some sort of active participation is required here. So therefore the sloth and torpor will be eliminated with the fulfillment of vitakka. So the applied thought is there, it is present, so it will eliminate sloth and torpor, the nimitta. And on the other hand, once you are there, so you are closely examining the object. So once you are examining the object, there are no doubts. So vichikicca, the other nivarana, the hindrance also not present, because you have no doubt at all. You are very sure this is it. Now you are applying your mind to the nimitta, and you are very sure it is, you are confirmed about it. You are very stable there. You have no doubts. Your mind is not wavering towards the past or future. So it is quite confirmed. So therefore doubt is not present. So this vichara, sustained thought, is opposite to doubt, vichikicca. On the other hand, when you feel comfortable and when you feel rapturous, blissful, then there is no room for ill will. So that is not possible to have both at the same time. So you are rapturous and you feel quite comfortable and contented, happy. So these are quite opposite to ill will. And then restlessness and worry is also not there, because you are quite comfortable and you are quite happy with the present situation and you are quite contented with the present situation. Therefore restlessness and worry, uddacca kukkuccha, is also not there. And since you are having some internal happiness, so mind doesn't want to wander. Mind doesn't want to get distracted. Typically, why mind get distracted is because of unhappiness available in the inside. It is now searching for happiness from outside. But on the opposite, now you have happiness inside. So therefore, mind doesn't want to go out in search of happiness. Rather, it is having, or it can enjoy happiness while being in the inside. So therefore internally you are happy, internally mind is peaceful, therefore mind doesn't have to wander. So the ekagata, the concentration is there. So mind get concentrated. So this concentration is opposite to kamachanda, opposite to sensual desire. So sensual desire is the one always promoting, going one after the other, changing the objects and distracting the mind, always feeling unsatisfied, wanting to go after different things, different experiences. So these are the properties of kamachanda. But here mind is well concentrated, and therefore concentration is opposite to sensual desire. So these jhana factors, as I shown here, are opposite to hindrances. So this king was able to enjoy this first jhana. So while he was enjoying it, he actually wanted to further his understanding, he wanted to further practice. Therefore he has left the kingdom and he has become a monk, and he was able to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. So after he became a Paccheka Buddhahood, so he is uttering this verse. He is mentioning Pahaya Pancha Avaranani Chetaso Upakkilese Vyapanujja Sabbe Anisito Chetva Sineha Dosam Eko Chare Kagga Visana Kappo. So what he mentioned, Pahaya Pancha Avaranani Chetaso. So as I mentioned, Nivarana are the ones covering the mind. So now the person is able to abandon those covers, those hindrances, having abandoned the five obstructions of the mind. So those are the ones obstructing the mind, covering the mind, hindering the mind. And now one is able to remove those five hindrances, those five covers. And then upakkilese vyapanujja sabbe. So one has now even remove the defilements. So there are different defilements available in the mind, and even those defilements are removed from the mind, having dispelled all mental defilements. Anissito chetva sineha dosam. Now typically either we get attracted to some sort of a pleasurable thing, or we get repelled to some sort of painful things. So therefore we are always jumping from attraction or repulsion. So this is the nature of the mind. We like something and another moment we don't like another thing. So always likes and dislikes are the ones governing the mind. So we are like in an unhappy situation, always jumping from this side to the other side, always wanting to get rid of suffering and always want to embrace, grasp happiness. So this is the typical nature. Now here this Paccheka Buddha explained, so you have abandoned that typical nature of the mind, either associating hatred or either associating attachment is eliminated, rather you live without attaching to anything, without associating anything. Anissito chetva sineha dosam. So now you are removing sineha and dosa, that is the, you are removing affection and hatred. So those are the two dualities. So those are the two extremes. Typically our mind get always jumping from this side to the other side. Those are the two extremes. So by eliminating those two extremes, you are able to live in the middle without attaching anything. So you have abandoned two extremes. At the same time, you are not sort of grasping the middle either. You are maintaining some equanimous attitude without grasping even the present, without grasping even the middle. So there is a similar verse available in the Majjhe Sutta. So there also Buddha encouraged this kind of a situation. So you are instructed to eliminate extremes and again not to hold even the middle. So it's a very subtle or delicate balance that one has to maintain. So typically we are jumping from one extreme to the other extreme. But here Buddha is encouraging not only abandoning those two extremes, but also not attaching or not associating even the middle. That's a very significant point that Buddha is highlighting at the Majjhe Sutta. Here also, in this verse also, it is somewhat mentioned, where one is maintaining very much an independent mind, unassociated mind, unattached mind in the situation, without going to any extremes, without going to hatred and without going to affection. Now the last part is typically the repetitive part, eko chare kagga visana kappu. So one is living like a rhinoceros horn. So I found this further information about the different defilements. So certain defilements are mentioned in certain suttas, and one sutta is Majjhima Nikaya Vattu Sutta or Vattupama Sutta, and there Buddha explained 16 types of different defilements. So these are the ones in a way polluting the mind. These are the defilements which are further coloring the mind, making the mind defiled. So those are Abhijja Visama Lobha. This is one way it is mentioned, covetousness and unrighteous greed. So you have some strong greed to someone else's something which is not belonging to you. Suppose that someone else has brought a very, very beautiful, say modern car. Now assume that you get a unrighteous kind of desire to that. So then it is a kind of a defilement in your mind. So it will hinder the mind. It will cover the mind. It will obstruct the mind. It will oppress the mind. So it's a defilement. So this covetousness and unrighteous greed is considered as a defilement. Further, one may have vyapada, that is the ill will, thinking that harm to another person, thinking not kind of a happy, pleasant, loving thought towards another. The opposite, you are having some ill will towards another person. So that's a defilement one can have in the mind. And kodha, that is the anger available in the mind. Then upanaha, the resentment. So it has developed to some extent, then it has become resentment. And then contempt, makka, palasa. So these are very subtle levels of defilements explained. Insolence. Issa is popular one, the envy or jealousy. So that is another defilement. Avarice, that you don't want to share what you have with another person. So you are somewhat subjected to this avarice, machariya. And then sometimes people are quite deceitful. They are not showing their true nature. So they are having some sort of a deceit in the mind. That is a defilement. And then fraud. So you are not showing the proper nature. You are not showing the true nature, but hiding it and showing something else. That fraud is another defilement. And then tambu. You are not flexible. You are not soft. Rather, we are having a kind of a fixation in the mind. And then sarambu. You are making kind of a rivalry. You are doing tit for tat and always going to quarrel. So not forgiving, always doing something bad or kind of having a kind of revengeful ideas. And that is the sarambu. Then the conceit, mana, where you are maybe comparing with others and feeling high-minded when compared to the others. On the opposite, feeling low-minded or feeling belittled with the others. So likewise, we do some sort of comparison, and as a result of that, we feel quite unhappy, and we are with the conceit. And it is actually taking us to the proudness, etc. So conceit is another hindrance, or conceit is another defilement with the mention. And then when you even go further, you might even can come to a extreme kind of conceit. This is called atimana, arrogance. So no one can change. So you are maintaining some sort of an arrogant attitude. Even say elderly person, your mother, your father, a good friend tell something, you are not ready to accept it. Even though it is true, you are not ready to accept it, because that kind of a high-minded, high conceit might available in a person. So that is, again, Buddha mentioned, is a defilement. And vanity, madu, so that you are not properly using yourself, and you are taking it to the kind of infatuations. So that is the mother. And pamada is another thing, that you are neglecting what is necessary to do, and you are ignorant about the present situation, and you are not properly using the time, and always postponing what needs to be done. So likewise, the pamada is also another defilement. So likewise, Buddha explained 16 defilements in the Vattupama Sutta. So likewise, in the verse, Buddha mentioned that different defilements are to be abandoned. So the five hindrances have to be abandoned, and the mental defilements also has to be dispelled, and then you are not attached to any extreme. That is, the either affection or hatred is also not there. So therefore, mind is maintaining a very beautiful balance without associating anything. Anisita. Eko chare kaggavisana kappo. Now one is living like a rhinoceros horn. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante, currently there are 7 questions. Question number 1. This is mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, I am trying to extend mindfulness practice from walking to day-to-day practice. Because of the efforts I've put more than a year with this program, I can say that walking mindfulness is quite productive and enjoyable. Even though there are distractions sometimes, most of the time I'm with the sensations on the floor or with the walking process, or at least I know that I am walking. When I try to extend this to day-to-day activities, for example, lying down, brushing teeth, having a bath, etc., it is not that easy. Most of the time I find that I'm not aware of what I'm doing, since I don't get any bodily sensations as proof. And these things are done based on pre-planned routines and the thinking mind. When I go prepared, I get some body sensations. For example, knowing that I'm standing and pressure on my heels, cold water flowing on my hands, etc. But majority of the time, the mind snaps to thinking habitually and completing the task while I am not aware of the present moment. As you advised to someone in the forum last time, who is also trying the same thing, it is hard to keep continuous mindfulness in day-to-day activities at first. I get that. In between these day-to-day activities, when I do a short walk mindfully, I don't see any problem of my practice as well. Bhante, is this because of a lack of samadhi during day-to-day activities? When I switch from well-focused mindful walking to day-to-day activities, I feel something is missing. This feels like the one-pointedness or the samadhi I have built during the walking process, which vanishes after 5 to 10 minutes. Theoretically, I can say what is mindfulness and what is concentration, but this is the first time I got evidence of them as a feeling without thinking. Without any words, I can point out and distinguish this is mindfulness and this is concentration. Is this a correct understanding relevant to day-to-day practice that I lack concentration? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, we can't say it is lack of concentration, but we can safely say it is lack of mindfulness. Because concentration is a result which is available when the mind is having a fair amount of mindfulness. And mindfulness is in our somewhat under our control, where we are able to develop mindfulness. So once we develop mindfulness, concentration is a byproduct. Concentration is a result that you can enjoy concentration because you have practiced mindfulness. You have developed mindfulness. You are not allowing the mind to wander to the past or future. You are trying to maintain attention with the breath, for example, as we discussed today. Now, as a result of that, breath has become somewhat kind of an anchor to the wandering mind. So mind wandering become less and less. So you are able to maintain attention closer to the nostril. As a result of concentration is developing. But still the distraction can happen. But you don't need to panic. Or you don't need to somewhat condemn yourself. Look down yourself. Rather, this is the way it is. And it seems like you are sort of expecting some good results very quickly, so it may not happen, because if you have too much expectations, high expectations, that itself makes the mind unhappy, because you want something, still you didn't get it. So that makes the mind unhappy. So that attitude has to be changed. So don't expect anything, rather simply enjoy what is happening. So having a very receptive mind is also quite necessary. Because if you are quite selective, I want only this, I don't want that. So that's a very selective mind. That makes the mind more obstructive or covered, and mind can't have freedom. But instead, in the proper practice, actually, you allow mind to slowly grow under the guidance of mindfulness. And now, once the mind is gaining a concentration, you can maintain that concentration. So therefore, give prominence to mindfulness. Don't worry about concentration. Concentration may happen once the mindfulness is fairly developed. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, how do you observe the rising and falling of phenomena in our mindfulness practice? Is it the gross breath that one should observe after establishing mindfulness, or should we wait until the breath fades away and reach the spacious space in order to focus on this aspect? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, the second approach is much better, in the sense, because simply seeing breath arising and passing away, still we are living in the conventional level, because still we have breath, still we have in-breath, still we have out-breath. So those are the terms that we are using for communication. Those are the common terms or conventional terms. But as we continue our practice, those conventional terms start to disappear. And even the typical perceptions start to disappear. And you can't even recognize whether it is in-breath or out-breath, but something is there, some sensation is there. So that is a better approach. That is a better or refined level of mindfulness and concentration, where you lost the typical names that we attribute, typical names that we are using. So those names are discarded, but now you are in a more direct experience, more primary direct experience, more fundamental experience. So that is, now you are understanding, or now you are observing what is happening to those characteristics, more fundamental characteristics. So that is the most important thing. So in order to do that, you can't quickly, you can't have such concentration immediately. You need a fair amount of practice. And you continue your practice, and once the breath even faded away, now you see how body is reacting. What are the sensations available in the body? So now your mind is fairly refined, fairly focused. Mindfulness is very high. So the necessary qualities are fairly developed. So with that developed qualities, you can easily go to the next part. So that is to recognize further about the subtle aspects of the breath, subtle aspects of the other sensations, etc. So that investigation would be possible when you have a fair amount of concentration. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 8. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, how can I stop giving value to random signs that come in during practice? I find my mind giving them value at times. Bhante, you mentioned last time not to give value, but the habitual mind is used to giving value. How to break this habit and be free of this? Much appreciated and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, it's a kind of a cognitive transformation where you have to educate the mind. So simply knowing part useful, but more and more you have to convince the mind. This is a mirage. This is not water. So likewise, because you haven't gone to investigate the mirage, but you know it is a mirage. You are quite sure about it. But another person, another, say, deer may not know it. So that's why it is running after the mirage. So therefore, Buddha mentioned perceptions, signs, marks are like a mirage. So we need to understand it. So we have to convince the mind. We have to educate the mind. We have to give enough knowledge to the mind to give up those different perceptions, different signs, different marks. On the other hand, we can logically think, now my eyes are closed. So when my eyes are closed, how these different visuals or visions happen? So that is because of the mental illusion. So that is because of the mental images. So those are mind-created ones. So mind-created visions are not true. So those are mental images. They are like a dream. Dream is not the real story. So therefore, likewise, we have to convince the mind not to grasp, not to give value, not to personify these different perceptions, different signs. Then they become merely signs. They become merely perceptions, different marks, merely marks, and they are not the real water. They are a mirage. So therefore, Buddha even deeply mentioned sanya virattassa na santi gantha. So when someone is able to maintain kind of a dispassionate attitude towards these different signs, then actually he may not get entangled to various defilements. Because he knows these are the former signs of defilements. It may appear like different signs, and he is not grasping them. He is not giving any value to them. Rather, he considers them as a mirage, merely signs, not giving value, because he understands. So this understanding is necessary, and it may grow as you develop the practice. And therefore, continue the practice. I think slowly you may gain this understanding.
Yeah. Question number 4 of 9. This is more of a suggestion. Dear Bhante, what is the Dhamma discourse you're planning to use in sessions next year? Venerable would decide the best and would like to suggest short abstract suttas from early stages of the Blessed One's life, if there is a possibility. Much merits for your valuable service, and may you attain Nibbana in this very life.
It seems that you are now feeling bored with the Kagga Visana Sutta because we are going on, not ending. Anyway, I think there are a few more verses to cover in Kagga Visana Sutta. So in the coming year also, I'll cover those few verses quickly, and then we'll get into another topic. Still, I haven't thought of anything. You can put suggestions to the organizers. Then we can discuss among ourselves, and then we can decide what would be the best way that we can continue. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, could you please explain the difference between mindfulness and concentration? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So even last time, I think I got the same question, mindfulness and concentration. Now, mindfulness, if we consider different aspects of mindfulness, where typically our mind is lost, or mind is thinking about the past or dreaming about the future, jumping from past to future, future to past. So likewise, it's a kind of a wandering, jumping, unmindful situation is available typically in the mind. So as we develop mindfulness, so we are now trying to be aware of the present moment activities. So different things are happening in the present moment. More and more, by letting go of the past and the future, now we are trying to be awakened to the present moment. So present moment, something is happening, we are aware of them. So this we can safely say, okay, one important aspect of mindfulness, without mind getting distracted towards the past and the future, and being lost in the past and the future, and being carried away by the past and the future, now you are awakened in the present moment. So you are having kind of a mindful footage. You are having a mindful stage, kind of a mindful vantage point. While being there, you can observe what is happening. So this is, we can say, mindfulness. And as we do this, so mind get slowly collected towards certain objects that we are using. If you are using breath to develop mindfulness, so now our attention slowly get collected there, collected towards the nostril. More and more, if our energy, our mind, or the attention being focused closer to the nostril, then we can say, okay, mind is getting concentrated. Whatever the attention we had, now getting collected. So this is how we can say, okay, mind is now getting concentrated. So it is very much like being focused. And this concentration actually is twofold. Either by using the same kind of object, you can maintain concentration, which is more into the samatha side, tranquility side. And on the other hand, one can have momentary concentration where objects are changing. But when it is happening, you are there. When it is happening, your attention is there. You are quite focused there. You are closely concentrated to that object when it is happening. During that manifestation moment, the mind is also quite concentrated there. So this is called momentary concentration. So therefore, certain differences are there in the concentration. So the unity or one-pointedness available in the mind is called concentration. On the other hand, mindfulness has a further broader type of understanding aspect where you are not wandering, or the mind is not being carried away by past thoughts or carried away by future dreams, expectations, wishes, etc., rather awaken to the present moment. That we can safely say as the mindfulness. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Yep, question number, I think it's 6 of 9, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, with regards to today's Dhamma talk, what do you mean by nimitta? I thought you were referring to the breath. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, at the beginning, we consider breath also like a nimitta, the sign of our attention. But as we continue the practice, so particularly when concentration is developed, not the clear comprehension, but the concentration is developing, most of the time, especially in the Anapanasati, a kind of a sign going to develop. So this sign is difficult to explain for a person who doesn't have such experience, because it's a kind of a mind-made one. But interesting point here is this is not a typical perception. This is not a typical sign. Now the typical signs that we were discussing today, even like mirage, are the typical conventional signs, like you are seeing a pagoda, you are seeing a Bodhi tree, you are seeing a person, you are seeing a Buddha image. So these are the typical signs, perceptions. But here the concentration sign is different. So it is very much manifest like maybe like a light, like a cloud, very soft cloud, or like a moon. So likewise, these are very certain signs appear in the mind, and those actually represent the concentration. Actually, as we grow in concentration, these signs might appear, and as we continue, so they become quite stable and they become even brighter. Then by letting go of the breath, one can pay attention to these signs. It can use as a mechanism, as a tool, to further strengthen the concentration, to get on to absorptions. So this is what I meant by the sign, nimitta.
Question number, I think it is 7 of 9. It's a very short report. For walking, as I stood, I felt the bottom felt smooth. And then for sitting, I had a headache while sitting. That's the end of the report.
Yeah. Please write more information. Then only you can be specific. What are the other things that you can recognize while sitting? What are the things that you can directly experience while walking? What are the other things that you directly experience? So then only you become more and more mindful. You become more and more aware of the present moment characteristics or present moment phenomena. So please try to recognize more information, more details.
Question number 8 of 9, general question. Dear Bhante, Please forgive me for asking a personal question, but this is just to comprehend how much practice we should pursue compared to a venerable who has dedicated life for the practice. Did Bhante meditate the whole day for years during the start of your monastic life? Was it Vipassana practice immediately or Samatha and then Vipassana? Thank you for your guidance during the past year and much merits for your service. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, I ordained in Nauyana Forest Monastery, and so they have Samatha-oriented Vipassana, Samatha Pubbanga Vipassana. So they first of all asked us to practice Samatha meditation. So therefore, for me, actually, it was quite difficult because I was with an extremely distracted mind. So my mind was extremely distracted. Even a moment, it can't stay with one object. It's like a machine jumping from this to that. So it's a kind of a nightmare to concentrate the mind. And so I have to have a big struggle to concentrate the mind. So therefore, I did a fair amount of Samatha practice using many different techniques like Buddhanusati, like Metta, and then Anapanasati. And once that is further developed, then the Kasina. So likewise, Samatha practice was done for about 1.5 years or something, a very long Samatha practice I have to involve with. And then I actually have practiced Vipassana. That is also a different technique. But after starting to associate Sayado U Pandita and Bhante Dhammajiva, then actually I given emphasis to Vipassana, especially the Satipatthana practice. Then actually the practice was becoming different, or more and more smooth, and more emphasize in the Vipassana. And I found that is much prominent, and that is much conducive and go in line with the Buddha's teaching. And further and further, one can understand one's own defilements, own shortcomings, and slowly one can correct those defilements, correct those shortcomings. So it's a more and more live practice, more and more interesting practice when we come into the Satipatthana. And that is kind of a turning point in my personal meditative life. And that is what I feel, therefore, much worth and better to concentrate, or rather better to motivate others also into the mindfulness and this Satipatthana practice. Yeah.
Question number 9. General question. Dear Bhante, would you please teach us Baddha Karakta Sutta to end our delusion of time? Greatly appreciate your service. Thank you and much merit, sadhu. That's the end of the question.
Okay, then we can decide that. So we'll invite our organizers, Chamila and Suranga, Chatu, to please remind me when we are reaching the end of Kaggavisana Sutta to take Baddha Karakta Sutta as the next sermon. Next topic.
Okay, Bhante. There was one more question. It was put into the form, but it doesn't make much sense. So I'll give an opportunity to the person. If they want to, they can clarify and ask that question for you, Bhante, directly. So if you did ask a question, has it been read? We've finished all the questions. So if you're the owner of that question, please raise your hand and you can ask it directly to Bhante. Maybe give it a few seconds. See if anyone wants to say something. Okay. Doesn't look like the person wants to say anything. We have one more person who wants to ask. Auntie Badra wants to ask some questions, so we'll give her the opportunity.
With all the respects to Most Venerable Bhante, I like to seek your permission to request something to Chatu, Chamila and Suranga. On behalf of this group, I have a feeling, Bhante, that this group might be now ready for a live retreat. So next year, if I may request you to accept on behalf of this most efficient team, I'm sure Chatu will sort of lead this organizing part, and Chamila and Suranga are there, to invite you to have a live retreat in Australia. Maybe we can pick Sydney, because then most of the people from Brisbane and Melbourne will be able to attend. I have a feeling it'll be a very beautiful experience to have you and have the group in a live retreat.
Yeah, interesting. We wish that the corona may not obstruct the situation.
Definitely. Yes, of course. But Chatu, with the help of Chamila and Suranga, of course, after the permission given by Bante, it will be lovely to organize towards Easter time, because you get the public holidays and maybe for a 5-day. It would be extremely marvelous if we all can have it at Mitrigala, but that's out of question at the moment. So please work on this, and I have a feeling people will get a lot out of this retreat, even if it's a 5-day residential retreat.
Yeah, we'll plan. Thank you for the proposal, and we'll plan how things may going to work out. Because I think 2020 or 2019 we had to cancel the whole trip, and we had actually planned a retreat in Brisbane, maybe one in Sydney, another one in Melbourne. The whole thing we had to cancel, so therefore this time we then have to be quite sure about the situation, and carefully we have to arrange the things. Hope I can contact Suranga and Chamila, so we'll see how things happen.
And Chatu will, I suppose, lead this. And most thanks, Bante.
Yeah. So actually, we are going to have another interesting conference with the Bante Dhammajiva's 70th birthday.
Yeah, so that's on February.
That is on 5th of February. That is also an interesting event lined up in the early part of next year. And maybe Bante Dhammajiva also may have plans to come to Australia. I don't know still when, not yet finalized. And we'll see how things happen.
Thank you very much.
How is the pandemic situation in Australia now?
Melbourne is very similar to New South Wales. But we are hoping the Queensland borders will open for us, Chatu.
it's going to be open, so we're going to be in the same situation as everyone else.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much for your services, Bante, and also the most efficient team. I feel the questions they are asking, I'm sure they are now ready for the, you know, for the live retreat experience.
Yeah, thanks. So I think Chatu has another announcement. I see. Yeah.
Yes. This is actually our last session for this year. So we'll close over the Christmas break. And I think we'll start in January. We'll send out an email, I think. But for that, I think Auntie is going to present some information on the screen.
See the slide on the screen?
Yeah,
we can see.
We can't hear you, Chamila. Okay, now we can.
So this is actually the retreat schedule I put in based on what is available in the Nissan Vanya website. I think Bandhu talked about it last week as well. So I just took the dates and times from the schedule. And so I'll be put here when the Q&A and the Dhamma Sermon times are based from SL time. So depending on where you are, you have to convert it. And then to submit the questions, you can send them to kamatahan.nv@gmail.com, and they will, you can specify which retreat you want it to be presented based on which one you're planning on participating, and they will read it out in that session. And so also to listen live, this included here the link, selah.com. So if you go and register in it, then you will get an email when the sessions are on, so you can be reminded and you can straight away log in online and listen to the proceedings from there. So both all these sessions will be broadcast live through MixLR. So, and also in parallel, we have the session organized here, residential. I think it's going to be in Brisbane, Melbourne, and Perth. Organizers are organizing residential retreats, but it's only basically who can travel and who want to travel. But we don't have information about it now at the moment, unless Chatu has something, connection.
So I know a little bit. So I don't believe there was planned to be an online component. It was meant to be like, as in the residential people were going to ask questions directly.
Actually, in the list, Chamila, you have missed another retreat. One is available from 19th to 24th. That's another 5 days retreat. So actually the whole month of December is fully occupied. One starting from 14th, actually now today is the last day of a 10-day retreat or almost 9 days retreat of with the monks, and then we are going to start another one from 14th. That's another 3 days retreat, and then 19th to 24th, 5 days retreat. From 26th to 31st, another 5 days retreat. And as you mentioned, 18th we have the full moon poyade.
If anyone wants to stay back, I can just amend this slide and put it in the chat window and you can download it, or if you want go to nisalman.lk, you can find this information as well.
Yeah.
And share that information.
So that ends our questions for this year, actually. First of all, I have to thank Bhante very much because he's spent a lot of time and dedicated a lot of effort to help us. So this has been going for more than a year, but we're very thankful, and we'd like to pass on our heartfelt thanks and our merits that we've accumulated for this entire year. I have to pass to you and for everyone who's received some benefit from this program. Secondly, to the organizers, and especially Auntie Bhadra as well, because it was her idea for this, I think. So we also have to thank her, and she's also giving us really good suggestions for retreats as well. So I hope we can continue with things like that. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, this would not go ahead. So thank you very much. Thiruvan Sanai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sanai.